John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show, is with me as my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to go from the surface of the planet Earth to the surface of our favorite star, the one that we celebrate every morning and say goodbye to for a while every evening. And to help us is a project scientist of the Solar Dynamics, Dynamics Observatory at the Goddard Space Flight Center, NASA, in Maryland. Dr. W. Dean Pesnell, he is project scientist, and he has the mission statement in this particular episode, to explain to me what it is that I'm observing with this unusually low amount of sunspots, almost none. The sun goes through, as I understand it, as I read it, solar maximum and solar minimum, perhaps every 11 years. But this is a minimum to my eyes. Dr. Pesnell, Dean, a very good evening to you. Thank you for helping us. Why is it that we track sunspots? What do they tell us about the sun? And where do they go, Dean? Good evening to you.
Where do they go? Well, first off, sunspots tell us information about the sun that we otherwise wouldn't know. It's like clouds on the Earth. But sunspots are actually little bits of magnetic field that for some reason pop up through the surface of the sun, and then over some period of time they will dissipate that magnetic field. They blow it off the sun as a flare, or they throw it off the sun as a coronal mass ejection. And so we watch them because it tells us something about the sun. The coronal mass ejections in particular can be hazardous to our life and technology, especially things that are in space. So we would like to be able to predict when the flares and the coronal mass ejections are taking place. So we study the sun to try and to be able to predict those two things. I study the sun to try and predict what's going to happen 5, 10 or more years into the future. So I want to know, if I'm building a mission today, what the Earth's atmosphere is going to be like in 5 to 10 years, because the sun, when there's more sunspots, heats the Earth's atmosphere up, causes it to expand, and that puts drag on the spacecraft that are zooming around in low Earth orbit. And when you put drag on something, it slows down and eventually will fall out of orbit. That's not what you want to happen. You kind of want to figure out and plan your mission to go to the right altitude. So you want to know what the sun will be doing in 5 to 10 years.
All right. So it's a predictive quality then that the sun can offer a peek into the future.
Right. Now, a sunspot is actually a bundle of magnetic field. It looks dark when you look at it in somebody's visible light pictures, or if you look through a special telescope. But actually, if you block out the bright stuff around it, the surface of a sunspot itself is actually still blindingly bright. It's just not as blindingly bright as the photosphere that sits around it.
I see. David?
Doctor, why do we hear that sunspots are drivers of our climate? So I can understand they heat and cool the atmosphere, and that shows up to us as climate on Earth?
So I worry about the climate far above the Earth's surface. And we definitely can see, especially above about 100 kilometers or 60 miles, we can see that when the sun is more active, the atmosphere is different high up above the surface. But when you get down into the troposphere, it's actually very difficult to find a reliable relationship between the surface temperature of the Earth and changes that happen in the sun.
You're looking at the sun now, but I see that there is a record of sunspot activity dating back in this 11-year-on, 11-year-off cycle to the late 19th century. I see a whole lot of activity around 1960, and then diminishing activity here in the early 21st century. I don't know what I'm looking at, Dean. Is this significant that there appears to be a pattern, or do we need more data?
Well, if there wasn't a pattern, it would be easy to predict, and I wouldn't have one of my jobs.
Right. Okay, fine.
So this is the weather on the sun.
Right.
And sometimes there's a lot of sunspots at solar maximum, and sometimes there's not so many sunspots at solar maximum. We would like to understand why the sun does that. That's still one of the mysteries of the solar cycle, why the maximum number of spots in a cycle goes up and down rather than is relatively constant. And as we go back in time even further, we even find periods of time where we don't see sunspots so much, but we can look at other what we call proxies or other measurements that tell us the sun was less active or more active back for thousands of years.
What causes the 11-year cycle and the variation in sunspots? We don't know, or are there good theories on what causes it?
No. We're still trying to understand why the sun likes 11 years. We do know that when we look at other sun-like stars, that they also have star spots in this case, and they vary with periods of anywhere from 1 to 2 up to 20 or 30 years. We haven't been able to watch them for long enough in some cases to know how long it takes for their spots to go up and down. So the sun is kind of, as it usually is, a fairly typical example of an active star of this type.
Yes, and we're lucky for it. However, there are anecdotes, and one of the anecdotes I really like is how pails of milk froze over in the morning during Shakespearean times. This is early 17th century. And that is connected in some fashion, anecdotally again, to a diminution or disappearance of sunspots altogether. Is that just romance, Dean, or is there anything to it?
So one of my other jobs is to be on a committee that's reconstructing the sunspot number in history. And there are people on that panel that are actually going back and looking for sunspot drawings and other data during the period of time called the Maunder Minimum. We can kind of look back to about 1610, and we know before that time nobody was really looking at sunspots. And after 1610, a variety of people started drawing pictures of the sun, and so we can go find those drawings, and we can count the number of sunspots that they have on the drawing, and start making up a sunspot number through the entire 1600s. And there is a notable lack of sunspots, but they're not totally absent from about 1645 to 1715. And that's been called the Maunder Minimum. And a great deal of effort has been going into trying to figure out whether the sun was actually, or not actually, how the sun was different during that period of time. Was it rotating slower? Were the spots only in the south of the southern hemisphere of the sun? In what ways was the sun different so that it didn't have as many spots as it does now? At the same time, here on the Earth, there had been a fairly long-lived cold time where the temperature had dropped well below average in the northern Europe, especially where we have the best written records. And the Maunder Minimum happens to happen at the same time as the depths of this little ice age. But you should note that the little ice age actually lasts longer than the time of few to no sunspots.
Very nice piece of detective work.
Yeah, the cold weather is there, but the Maunder Minimum does coincide with the coldest depths. So there may be a small amount of cooling that happened during the modern minimum, but the Earth's climate itself had already done some major changes before the solar effect came into play.
This is Hotel Mars. We're speaking with Dr. W. Dean Besnell. He's the project scientist, Solar Dynamics Observatory. This is the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, NASA, of course. And when we come back, that happened in the 17th century. What about the 21st century and the apparent lack of sunspots right now? Does that have a significance, especially as we're all looking at global climate? David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. This is the John Batchelor Show, Hotel Mars, Episode N, with David Livingston, my colleague and co-host and co-pilot. We're having a very happy and revelatory conversation with Dr. W. Dean Besnell, project scientist of the Solar Dynamics Observatory. He's at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. And one of the exciting things I've learned from Dr. Besnell, David, is that we don't know. I love to hear we don't know. That means you and I and Hotel Mars have reached the frontier itself. So I will pose the first question of what we don't know. I won't ask the hard one. I'll ask the weak one here. Dr. Besnell, Dean, we're seeing unusually low activity of sunspots right now, a minimum. Is there any way to know ahead of time, since you look out 3, 4, 5 years? Are we going into a period like the 17th century where we will have few, if any, sunspots? And is there any way now with the equipment, the tools that you have at NASA to measure atmospheric climate change on Earth?
Well, I can certainly talk about whether solar cycle 25 will be here. Because the cycle we just finished, we call solar cycle 24, and we're now in the minimum period, and cycle 25 should start sometime next year. We already see the small active regions of the next solar cycle. They've come out at about the right latitude. They don't last very long. I think only one of them has actually been called a true sunspot, which means that the people at NOAA have given it an active region number. But there's been a couple of dozen small, I call them magnetic complexes, that have come up to the surface that are associated with solar cycle 25. But at the same time, there are few to no complexes associated with solar cycle 24. And that usually means that solar cycle 25 has started its upturn in activity. Now, we look out 5 years using our prediction method, and we say that the solar cycle 25 should be very similar in activity to solar cycle 24. It's not going to be dramatically lower, and it will not be dramatically higher. Be about the same. So it kind of looks like what happened back in the early 1800s or even the early 1900s, where there were two cycles that were kind of low, and then the activity grew back up out of them. We do not, in our method, see that the sun is going to shut down its activity and enter what's another grand minimum, such as the Maunder minimum.
David? David, I want to give you a chance.
Okay. It would seem to me that it would be beneficial, if it were at all plausible someday in the future, to influence sunspot activity, either minimum or maximum. Is there any chance of ever anything like that happening? Could there be a technology or a way to influence sunspot activity?
Wow. You don't ask for anything, do you?
Just the world. Well, and winning the lotto, but you know, the world is probably easier.
Well, sunspots, as we that we see right now, can often be the size of the Earth or Jupiter, and the diameter of the Earth or the diameter of Jupiter. So that's a substantial amount of material that one would have to influence. And I really don't see how you would be able to do that. It's coming from inside the sun. So anything you would want to do to manipulate it, you would have to, send stuff into the sun to make that change. And that's probably beyond our technology for a while. However, I will point out that you're actually a fairly smart man. Do you know how I know that?
Because I have a PhD.
No, Mark Twain had the same idea.
Oh, really? Okay.
And he actually wrote it up in one of his books, and he said he was going to, let me see, I have the quote here. I have my plan all mapped out, whereby I hope and expect to acquire complete and perfect control of the sunspots.
Dr. Pesnell, I have a fun project David and I try now and again before we control the sunspots. I want to give you an unlimited budget, not for interfering with the sun's growth or aging, but also for what you can learn from an unlimited budget and a NASA probe to the sun. What would you ask for first, Dean?
Well, actually there are things that we are unable to measure from the Earth. We can measure the magnetic field, which surprises many people because typically you use some sort of a compass here on Earth, but we're able to look at the light and measure the magnetic field. But we can't measure the electric field, which is the thing that actually makes things move. And I would like to measure that, and I need to send a probe along and measure things near the surface of the sun. So if I had an unlimited budget, I would build that spacecraft.
To explore the sun the way we're exploring Jupiter, the way we explored Saturn in over many years?
Yes. And as we explore the Earth's upper atmosphere as well, we measure the same kinds of fields in all the planet's atmospheres. And that tells us the electric field's like a voltage. It tells us how the electrons and other charges are going to move. And in the magnetic field changes how they move, but it's the electric field that makes them move. And so we can't measure that at the sun yet. And so that would be my unlimited budget, would be to build a sun skimmer that could go in and measure this information along the surface of the sun.
It will be done. Dr. W. Dean Pesnell is the project scientist of the Solar Dynamics Observatory, even if we have to crowdfund it, Dean, at the Goddard Space Flight Center, National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Mark Twain for another day. David Livingston, Dr. Space. I'm John Batchelor. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N.